and today we're taking another dive into the world of Reddit, which has been called the least known but most influential social media site on the web.
Reddit has something for everyone, from confessions and unpopular opinions to niche subreddits like bread staple to trees, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
We first ventured down the rabbit hole last year in our Reddit Roulette episode, where we explored the history and the role of being anonymous in the darker side of Reddit.
And in this episode, Reddit Roulette returns as we spin the wheel and see where we end up in the comments. So, are you ready to spin the wheel again, Lisa?
I sure am. Let's do it. So this is the last episode of our season three, and just wanted to let you know that later on we will be doing a quick recap after the final thoughts, you know, on the stories and the questions that you've sent us and we've not had the chance to respond to yet. So please stay on till the very end.
Absolutely. But in our first season, we introduced Reddit Roulette, which was a mashup of Chat Roulette and the Reddit forums.
And I'm sure most of you have heard of Reddit. But if anyone's interested in a bit more of the backstory, then yeah, I urge you to go back to season one, episode 10, where we did our first Reddit Roulette. I think it's a really good listen.
Actually, we enjoyed it so much that we thought we'd bring it back and dust it off for a round two.
So how it works is that we spin the roulette to find the best comment in a certain forum, or as they say in Reddit, subreddit.
And I'm jumping straight back into the Am I the Asshole forum, which is actually a subreddit where users post about their real world interpersonal conflicts. And then they receive judgment from fellow Redditors. And I have to admit, since we did this episode last year, I've become slightly addicted to these threads. Yeah. And, you know, I think what intrigues me so much is I love hearing about how people respond in different situations. And also just what different people think is normal or not, as the case may be.
Yeah, me too. And I just think it shows how one person can think what is completely okay, someone else thinks is completely outrageous.
So let's kick things off by playing Reddit Roulette. So I'm just going to warn you, Lisa, this is a bit of a long one and it's got a couple of updates, but I do think it's totally worth it.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm snuggled in.
Okay, so here's what we've got. Am I the arsehole for not telling my boyfriend I won money 15 years ago?
What? No. Already, yes. Yes, you are the asshole. How much?
Oh, interesting. I would have gone the other way. But my boyfriend, 35 male, and I, 35 female, were discussing finances as we wanted to be on the same page. My boyfriend moved in with me unexpectedly 3 months ago as his landlord decided to move into the property with his family. We were discussing finances and the topic of how I own my place came up. I explained I won some money, not a lot, but enough to be able to put myself through nursing school, purchase my home and have some savings, back in 2009. He says I deceived him by giving him the impression that I was financially well off and that I led him to believe I was more business savvy than I was. Mm-hmm. He now says that he can't trust me anymore and that he was stupid to have listened to my financial advice. But the thing is, I never gave him any financial advice except for telling him not to buy a car that was, in my opinion, unreliable and much too expensive. Did I deceive him by not telling him how I got myself financially stable? So let's just start with this original post. What do you think? What's your initial reaction?
Ooh, financial secrecy in a relationship and boundaries, such a tough topic.
And at what point in the relationship? Because yes, in this post, it doesn't say how long they've been together. And we're talking about money earned 15 years ago. He knows she owns the house. Does she have to tell him how?
No, in that case, no, I don't think so.
What I think's interesting, though, I will point out, and I think it easily slipped in and people wouldn't have noticed, but she said he unexpectedly moved in with her 3 months ago because, you know, somehow mm-hmm. he was kicked out or whatever. So it sounds like they didn't actually have a proper conversation about,
yeah,
okay, let's plan this going forward. Would they have moved in under those circumstances? And he just moved in with her.
Yeah, it's that classic thing, though. What do you do if someone's got, like, a home, a mortgage, or even money, and one doesn't? It is something that's very awkward in a relationship because there is always that sort of feeling like, oh, someone could be thinking, oh, you're going to help me have a step up the ladder. Do you know what I mean? Let's not yeah. be dishonest. A lot of people find that very attractive if someone's financially comfortable.
Yeah, but, okay, so I'm going to give you some of the top comments because this might help. The first person said, you're not the arsehole. This feels like jealousy on his part, so he's lashing out. Out of interest, how long have you two been together? Because this kind of information can take a while to disclose. If you were together when you won the money and hid it from him, that might be a different argument. And the original poster actually answered and said, FYI, we've been dating for almost a year and a half.
Okay.
So she won this money basically 13 years before this and bought the house and now owns the house. And then she can still pay for things. She doesn't say how much she won, but...
But here's the thing, Sarah, you know, how many significant life events have you had where you're like, winning money is quite a big thing? Would it not just come up, oh my God, I had this amazing luck once, I won this money? I mean, is this something you don't want to advertise because you're worried then people are with you for the wrong reasons? It's, you know...
She obviously hasn't won 20 million or something because she's still working. So it was, you know, if you earn enough to buy you a house and put you through college, that is important. But is it any different from maybe like inheriting a little bit?
Good point.
I would be worried if she was like Rockefeller, like she'd won 100 million and she's like, I just... didn't feel the need to mention it because that would make a massive difference. But it feels like it got her the house, but now she's living off her own income. So it's kind of not necessarily as relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But the second comment from someone was, my concern is that he might have thought you were very wealthy and was hoping you would be his sugar mama.
Okay.
Is he only in this for the money?
Oh, to my point, yeah. I'm going back to this point. I think it's the fact that something quite amazing and lucky happened to you and you didn't share it, you know? It's like big success moments in your life. I would be like, why don't you want to share this information? It did happen a while ago. You can rationalise it. Was she sort of misleading him a little bit, you know, that, you know, she'd done all this on her own, off her own back? There is part of me, it's like, you know, part of being in a relationship is sharing these magical moments that have happened to you in your life, you know? Why do you think she wanted to hide it? Why do you think she didn't tell him?
That is the crux of it. Did she hide it or did it not come up?
Oh, that classic, what do they say, lie by omission?
Yeah, but I mean, I've been in sessions with a therapist where I've gone, oh, of course, you know, blah, 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 you know, that I grew up poor. And he was like, what? You never mentioned that before. And I was like, oh, I must have mentioned it to a different therapist. But sometimes you already know.
How many therapists do you have, Sarah? Jesus Christ, you got a roster.
No, but sometimes I forget who I've told stuff to, or I don't know, 15 years ago. So it's like I don't tell everyone that I went to Oxford, but it's not really, like, it doesn't always come up. Do you know what I mean? Do I have to go around telling everyone? And then if someone finds out after I've known them for a while, have I lied to them?
I think it's a major life event, though, where you went to university. I'm going back to, like, where did you grow up? How old are you? Where did you go to university? What work do you do? Oh, you got a house. That's nice. Yeah, I won it on the lottery.
And we're talking about someone who's only moved in accidentally 3 months ago. Should you be saying how much you've got in your bank account? You know?
Yeah, I agree on that part. Like, I generally about finances when you first start dating, that you don't want to be hanging it all out there, whether you're in masses of debt. Well, actually, that's a big point. But it'd be different, like, say if you like had half a million in debt. Like, I wonder if you still stick around. But but in this particular scenario, was there gaslighting involved, do you think?
Well, so from the Washington Post article, what they said was the gaslighter's need for control and power in a relationship is a key component of gaslighting. So I would say in this case, there does seem to be an attempt to sort of exert power and control from him by sort of convincing her that she's completely out of line.
Mm-hmm.
But I think things will get a little bit clearer with the first series of updates to this story. So hold your hat. So she added this edit. I just had another very weird conversation with him and I honestly can't wrap my head around it. Yeah, so he's definitely a gold digger. He asked me how much I have in savings and seemed impressed with how much, and then said maybe he reacted too aggressively. Then he asked/told me that he still wants the car I advised him not to get. He hinted at me getting it for him as a birthday present since it's his birthday in early March. I am definitely dumping him. Edit 2. He's jealous and also resentful. He's ranting about how he would have tripled the money if he'd have won it. So what do you think of him now with these edits?
I can just imagine him sat there telling her what a fool she is, doing a bit of mansplaining, how she should have invested in this and that. And I'm so glad now that we kind of got to the bottom of this story.
Well, some of the comments, one I particularly like, run, Forrest, run. Seriously, he was so blinded with rage that you, check notes, had money, that he just started yelling incoherently at you. not the asshole, but you need a quick and safe exit. Boyfriend sounds unhinged.
Oh, gosh.
Well, if you thought we got to the bottom of that story, you would be wrong, because
what?
That commenter was surprisingly on the money. So are you ready for the final update? Because things are about to escalate.
Oh my God, is it going to get fatal attraction? What's going to happen?
Wait for this. Okay. So my sisters and brother-in-law came over and I asked him to leave. He got very angry and argumentative. He couldn't believe I'd break up with him over such a little thing. As if he hadn't spent 3 days yelling and ranting at me, he finally left and is now staying at his parents' house. Then I got a call from Mike, who's one of his friends, and he asked me what happened because my ex-boyfriend was telling people he broke up with me for being a cheater.
Nice.
Wait. You haven't even reached it yet. I explained the situation to his friend and he laughed, saying he was wondering when he'd bring up his money schemes. So we had a long chat and he told me how my ex had recently lost a lot of money in trading and that's what pushed him over the edge. Mike told me to move on and to change my locks because my ex apparently had a history of being nasty when dumped. Well, boy, was he right.
Oh.
Because a few days after that, my ex broke into my house and took a shit on my kitchen counter.
Wait.
He was arrested while he was in the process of evacuating his bowels. I obviously changed the codes to my security system so he couldn't get in with the old codes. And by the time he'd broken in the back door, police were already on their way. He tried to tell the police that he was my boyfriend and lived in the house. But what resident breaks the back door of their house and then takes a shit on their own kitchen counter? He spent the night in jail and was bailed out the next day by his parents. I'm also in the process of getting a protection order. I've never dated Crazy before, and I'm absolutely gobsmacked at his insanity.
Oh my God. When is this becoming a Netflix show?
I know, right?
Oh my God, deranged.
It's like 0 to 100 in like not very, in 3 days. It is very funny to read, but I just want to bring out this one comment that I think highlights stuff. And it says, wow, oh wow, these stories are often a bit out of this world. Sadly, yours, while utterly insane, presents the reality too many women face. There's something so ingrained in our society that makes men furious with women when they're just being wise, educated, and everyday, and consequently better off than they are.
Mm-hmm.
Also, how much do you think, you know, how often do women have to worry about men reacting aggressively when you know, to any kind of rejection? Because this obviously went a bit crazy.
I mean, this seems a very extreme story. And I mean, the thing is with me living the way I do in Norway, my little remote place, is I don't know really what's going on in society. When I read these Reddits, I'm like, is this happening all the time? Or is this just a really bizarre case? But that is sort of feeding into that idea, you know, I mean, we've watched, is it Dirty John on Netflix? You know, all these con artists, con men kind of stories where, you know, women that are really lovely get, you know, fall in love and then they get completely tricked and swindled and then even threatened when they find out the truth, you know? And this feels like one of those horror stories.
I mean, I'm assuming she was in love with him at one point, you know, and suddenly it's just like a switch flipped. But luckily it didn't turn out in the weird scheme of things, she didn't get hurt. It didn't turn out too badly. And hopefully it doesn't continue after that.
I wonder if she moved house or at least changed the kitchen. I would have.
Yeah, no, and she sent him a bill as well. So I think she was going to take him to small claims court. So hopefully a happy ending. But yeah, I mean, that's quite an am I the arsehole. She started off wondering if she was the arsehole. But pretty much once someone's broken into your house and shat on your kitchen, you know you're not the arsehole in that scenario.
No, you're dealing with a psychopath at this point. All right, Sarah. Do you want to spin the wheel?
I do.
So, we've not had enough psychology today. We've landed on the Raised by Narcissists subreddit.
Oh, wow.
This is the post. My opinion is that when people say someone is trauma dumping, they're just shaming people for needing to talk to someone about hard experiences. It's funny how people went from, oh, if you need to talk, you're never alone, to don't trauma dump on others as it makes them feel so uncomfortable and traumatizes them. Angry face. And here are some of the responses to this post. One needs balance. They can't keep it all a secret and never speak, but also shouldn't tell everybody. Both are harmful. And number two, yes, had a friend who only called to vent. Didn't care how I am, had no other stories, just venting. That's trauma dumping. If it's a friend who's there for you and shares other bits of their life, then it's fine. But you can't turn someone into your personal and free therapist.
Mm.
Someone also said, what is the difference between sharing something and then trauma dumping? So trauma dumping is telling a first date the ins and outs of the trauma and its lasting impact. Talking to someone is breaking down crying over a coffee during a heart-to-heart with someone. Okay, back to trauma dumping is sending pages and pages of venting to a friend you haven't spoken to in weeks. So, Sarah, I wanted to start with, have you heard of this phrase trauma dumping? You know, what do you make of it?
Yeah, I have. And I think the difficulty with this kind of thing is context is key. And it's where emotional intelligence comes in, really. And some people aren't very good at reading signals. So there are certain circumstances where you could meet someone and very quickly, the first time you've met them, you have a conversation that naturally flows to you both sharing personal stuff. Mm-hmm. But you can feel it feels appropriate. It's not like the other person is sort of, you know, you sort of edged into it. And there's you sitting down on a first date and they're going, how was your day? Well, like, blah, 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 this, because when I was a child, I was this. That's definitely trauma dumping, the second one. The thing for me is it's not necessarily, like, I think there are times in a first date where you could talk about deeper things.
Mm-hmm.
It's reading the room, really, and reciprocity, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's a big part of one of the comments. If you share stuff and the friend shares stuff and you listen as well, that's okay. That's a reciprocal relationship. If you just every time sit down and it's like, and then when the other person wants to share theirs, you're not interested.
Mm-hmm.
That's clearly trauma dumping as well.
Yeah. It's quite a trendy term that I'm seeing a lot of lately. Because actually we were discussing before we did season 3 about the concept of trauma dumping, because we'd seen a letter where someone had written in to a big newspaper and said, look, I want to dump this new friend because all she does is trauma dump on me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the responses were like, well, actually, post-COVID and just generally the world we're living in, people are more introvert and finding it harder to connect with people and they're feeling more lonely. So when they meet people, they can get quite, it's hard to read the signals a little bit. And I'm not trying to say that everyone's like this, but there's this idea that we're trying desperately to connect with each other and it's coming off wrong.
Yeah. And I read another thing where it was also talking about, you know, with the lockdown, but also the younger generation who've grown up with too many screens, learning those social cues and the emotional intelligence. It hasn't, some people have failed to do that to the same extent. I know, for example, I'm on a farm in the middle of nowhere by myself. And I just went to visit friends the week before. And I definitely felt like I was like, because you don't get to talk as you're by yourself. Then when you see someone, it's all comes out. You've got to get your conversation for the week in that small spot. But I would like to think that I also ask questions. I'm interested in other person's life too. The reason therapists need to have a supervisor to vent to as well is if you're just constantly hearing the most extreme trauma, you can get traumatized by that too. So you have to be careful. It's a little bit like trigger warning. If you're going to go into graphic descriptions of any kind of abuse, you need to make sure first that that other person is comfortable with that, you know? And usually that would be when you're in a really long-term friendship and you've built it up by degrees. You haven't jumped straight to that initial thing before really checking and getting to know each other.
Yeah, and that's interesting because, like you said, you can become fast friends and feel that chemistry like we did, where we quickly shared things when we met.
We shared a lot.
We shared a lot when we met at boot camp.
Also, you know, you've got trauma bonding as well. So, I think sometimes people dump trauma, and if they dump, if it's two people who are traumatized, they can then bond over their shared trauma. And I think some people will bond over that. And that's a little bit dangerous because it's almost like you're focusing so much. Like, obviously, you need to get things out. But if you stay constantly in the trauma, you just re-traumatize yourself.
Yeah. Or maybe that is the only thing you have in common. Like, and I'm talking about a spectrum of trauma. But like, I've been in environments where maybe we both went through like a situation, say at work, you know, not heavy, like years and years ago. Like when we went through redundancies together and you're all traumatized and you really support each other and you want to see each other well, but you can't keep talking about it. You got to move on.
No.
And some people don't move on, you know, they never get over it. And I think there's these instances where you can get stuck. And this brings me to these this comment. There are those people that just dump and dump and dump. Your friends aren't your therapists. I had to walk away from a friendship because there was extreme trauma dumping every single time we would get together. Yes, people go through hard times, but there is a need for boundaries and finding a therapist if you really need to talk and resolve your issues. And this is something that I feel a little bit embarrassed about, because before I met my first brilliant therapist at 27, I used to call my friends a lot and just go on and on about my own stories. And I feel a little bit of guilt when I look back at myself now. And then I went and got a therapist and I stopped that. In fact, people were like, where are your phone calls now, Lisa? Where's the drama? What's happening? And I'm like, I'm working on it quietly. One of the good things I think someone said to me years ago is, do you want to vent at me and just listen, or do you want me to fix this for you?
Oh yeah, that is a good thing. Yeah. I've done that as well, where this person comes to you as if they're wanting help and you spend ages trying to like talk them through it. And then later they go and do the exact opposite, which isn't going to help. And you realize they never wanted help at all. What they wanted was an audience or a sympathizer. Yes. And I was like, if you're so determined to stay in that thing, then like I had put in all that effort and it was like, oh no, I just stepped into being the rescuer. I need to step back.
What do you mean the rescuer? Describe that for me. I've never really understood that, all these drama triangles.
Yeah, the drama triangle is when it's not the act so much as being in that role fulfills some kind of emotional need for you. So being the victim, being the rescuer, or being the persecutor somehow fulfills an emotional need. And that means usually that if someone is, for example, really wants to be the victim, no matter what you do to try and help them, they don't actually want to step out of that because they're getting some emotional need filled by being in the victim. And sometimes they're not aware of it. As a rescuer, you know, I can put my hand up that I've been probably all like the rescuer and victim. I've been a lot. As a rescuer, it's, you know, people who are always wanting to help others. But I think it's because you get this sense of maybe you have too strong an empathy. So actually what it is you're not trying to rescue them for themselves. You are trying to rescue yourself from the discomfort of seeing someone else in pain.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
And that's a really important part, particularly parents need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many parents want to prevent their kids crying or being in pain or doing something difficult, but actually that thing is going to be good for them. So if your kid cried every time it wanted to brush its teeth and you just thought, oh, I can't bear seeing him upset, so I'm not going to do that. But then his teeth falls out because he's never brushed his teeth. What you were doing was not actually helping them. You were trying to not feel that discomfort.
That's interesting. Yeah, and avoid it. I think in perspective, one of the things, like financial literacy, I'm always going on about that school should do that. I also think there should be a lot more focus. And I don't know if they do it at school about emotional intelligence and reading the room.
Yeah.
How to do friendships, how to do give and take, how to handle conflict. Boy, would I have benefited from that.
Yeah, me too.
And like you said, like how to handle your emotions just generally and ready you for the adult world. Because I think you and I, Sarah, have bonded so well because we did share a lot with each other and we trust each other with our vulnerabilities. But I have been in situations myself where I'm like, I don't think I can carry this for somebody else. I've got enough on my plate, but I want to listen. And then I put myself into a spiral where I have to do that role every time I see them. So such an interesting topic and something that I'm very conscious of when I meet people. It's like, how much do I want to share? How much do I want to take on their stuff?
Yeah. And sometimes we get it right and sometimes we get it wrong. Just keep practicing. So for this next round, I'm going to do the subreddit of unpopular opinion. And this is where people share what they believe are opposite to what most people think, which sparks a debate. It can often be something really simple like disliking a popular film. So one was A Clockwork Orange really isn't all that great, which I have to say I strongly disagree with, but I'll allow you to have that opinion. Someone else said Antiques Roadshow is riveting television. And you know what? I'm kind of on board for that. And probably one of my favourites, which is totally random, was unpopular opinion, heptagons are so fucking cool. And someone argued back saying, no, hexagon is the bestagon, most efficient shape found in nature. And this is a really popular thing, this unpopular opinion. I mean, there's a radio show in Cape Town where they go, oh, unpopular opinion for the day. Loads of websites put together the best unpopular opinion list. It's really quite popular, ironically.
I mean, especially in a world that feels so politically correct, you know, you kind of feel like it is quite nice to sort of throw something out there. I mean, yeah. But how do they decide what is unpopular? I mean, is it really that unpopular to, like, what are they called? Heptagons.
Heptagons. Well, I've seen comments about these hashtags where some people are really not that convinced by this thread. So there was a post on Glassdoor Confession that said, popular opinion. Most people who start posts with unpopular opinion clearly have no clue what an actual unpopular opinion is. And someone replied, people will be like, unpopular opinion, but I think women deserve rights. And I don't know how unpopular that is.
Wow, I can imagine that appeals to a certain demographic in America. Okay,
yeah,
go on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was actually listening the other day to Megan Phelps-Roper, and she was on Armchair Expert with Dax Shepard. And she was talking about how she'd originally been in the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yes,
she grew up in
that,
and it's this really extreme Christian church from Kansas. It's stridently homophobic and anti-Semitic, and they're famous for picketing funerals, which I don't even know who dreamed that up. But she was talking about how an anthropologist had described shame as being the feeling that we have when we know that we've violated the norms of our community. And how your norms are very much defined by the community that you're in. So I think when people post about an unpopular opinion, they're talking about it being unpopular in their regular community. And then they post online. And I think what they're actually looking for is another community that will agree with them.
Absolutely. And I think you get a lot of people that just post an opinion just to get a reaction, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, you know. But okay, so let's see what counts as an unpopular opinion as we spin the Reddit roulette for this round. Okay, what have we got? Boundaries are just PC ultimatums. Ooh, interesting.
Ooh.
So in dating subreddits or in any post that has to do with dating, people often talk about boundaries and respect. And one popular thing is that you should never issue an ultimatum. And then they basically describe one. They say, instead of saying you'll break up if they don't do this, say you won't be with someone who does this. That means the same thing. Don't get me wrong, I get that you shouldn't make threats, and I'm guessing that's the point, but ultimatum and boundaries are almost the same thing. Okay, so what do you think of his take?
I remember a really good friend said to me, never make a threat to your man that you're going to leave him unless you really mean it, because they don't take you seriously after the first threat.
I know exactly what you mean, because I remember as a kid, my mum, if she was like telling us off, she'd be like, if you don't behave, I'm going to revoke your privileges. I don't know why she said that to children, but and I was thinking, what privileges? What is she talking about? And it became a thing where I was like, I mean, this isn't concrete. This is something you say. I know it doesn't mean anything. Whereas if you're very clear and you go, you know, you do this again, you're not allowed to watch TV tonight, and then you make sure you follow through, you know you can trust them with their boundaries. But otherwise you think, meh, I won't, you know, they're all talk, you know? So I do get what you're saying.
I'm thinking because, you know, I said I grew up loving Dynasty, and I think Alexis was always giving ultimatums to Blake. You should be like, God damn it, Blake, if you don't let me take over, you know, something, something company, then I'm going to take everything. And
yeah.
Your wife will be, you know, not allowed to wear her furs anymore. It was over the top and dramatic. And I think we grew up with that. I grew up with that template of drama. Like that kind of over the top American, like, ultimatums. But now it's like, you imagine if you said to someone, look, I'm really uncomfortable when you do that behaviour.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Otherwise, but what are the consequences? Otherwise, what?
Well, I think that's what he's saying, because he's saying if you place a boundary and then say, here are the consequences, how is that any different from saying, I'll leave you if you do this, you know? But actually, if we go to some of the top comments, it might clear it up. So comment one said, boundaries are something you know about yourself. Ultimatums are threats you place on someone else.
Ooh.
And the reply was, though, but wouldn't like your boundaries create ultimatums? And then comment two, a boundary need not be said to the other. And if it is, it is said before it is crossed. It is preventative. I think that's quite a good point, you know? Mm. Like, by the way, I would never date a smoker. So that's just something I'm going to be clear up from up front. If you're not a smoker, we can go ahead. But you also know that, like, if you take up smoking, that's going to be a problem. You know, that's very different to, like, if you don't give me this, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it seems, though, this is, you know, we've these spins have been quite random, but it turns out there has been a general theme of therapy speak in these ones. And so this third comment, I think, really is relevant. And it says, therapy speak leaking into the general population through TikTok, Insta, without proper understanding of what these words mean. Ultimatums are fine, but when you jump to ultimatums quickly or feel the need to issue them, your relationship is probably on fire already. Boundaries are way before that. They're usually not attached to specific consequences. You set boundaries with the expectation that the other person will generally be mindful of them. A boundary being violated doesn't immediately mean you're breaking up. Ultimatums and breakup threats are what you get when boundaries are consistently ignored over an extended stretch of time, or if there is an extreme violation. So how do you feel about that?
This is interesting, because I do feel like boundaries are the normal, toned down, lo-fi way of communicating that something in a relationship that is a problem.
You know, I think it's very similar to, like, you know, when we're talking about gaslighting and things like that, people can misuse the word. So it gets really confusing when people are talking about boundaries, but they mean very different things. So the Washington Post said, therapists say that while it's healthy for people to talk about setting boundaries, many people use the term incorrectly. And when misused, a boundary can become a means of controlling someone else's behavior or making demands. So just to break it down, there are sort of different types of boundaries. You can actually set a boundary with yourself. And I actually think these are the most important ones. So you say to yourself, I'm not going to drink alcohol during the week. I'll only have it on the weekend or something, you know, or I'm going to make sure I go to the gym every day. That's a personal boundary. And often it's when we violate those boundaries with ourselves that it causes us the most amount of distress, because we lose that sense of trusting ourselves. And then in personal relationships, it's often just verbalizing how you want to be treated. So, for example, if you're at a family barbecue and there's some random relative or relative's partner, and they just keep asking you repeatedly about your dating life because you're the one singleton or something, you know, a boundary in this respect could just be saying, you know, I don't really like talking about that. And none of those examples, I would say, are ultimatums.
You are reminding me of when we did our emotional truths episode and the section where we talked about Jonah Hill. He did that infamous text where he told his girlfriend about his boundaries, or his ex-girlfriend now. You know, for example, he said that she wasn't allowed to go surfing with men, which was really random. I'm still thinking about that. That lives rent-free in my head, you know.
Yeah, you know what? And that, for me, is not a healthy use of the word boundary. So Leah Aguirre, who's a psychotherapist, and she's the co-author of The Girl's Guide to Relationships, Sexuality and Consent, she said, a boundary can become abusive when you're infringing on someone's autonomy and personal life and identity. If you're saying, my boundary is for you not to have male friends, for example, which is something I see a lot in abusive dynamics, it's essentially a means of control. And Sophie Benoit, who's a 30-year-old comedian and advice columnist, she also said, we've all been taught that you're not supposed to cross people's boundaries. But if it's always someone saying, I want to do this thing and we're all going to do this thing, that's not boundary setting, that's being in charge.
Oh, I like that. That is true. Yeah. There's so many ways that people twist the language, right, to make it work for themselves.
Absolutely.
All right, let's do the final spin. Ooh, landed on my favourite, witches versus patriarchy. So I found this post. Are you ready?
Yes.
Nobody is putting gargoyles on buildings anymore. It can't be that much more expensive to slap a gargoyle up there. We used to be a proper country.
Sorry. Keep going.
That's it. That is the complaint. And you know what? I love this, because I was really like, what happened to gargoyles? Justice for gargoyles. Where are they? I don't see them anymore on new buildings. Can I put them on my house?
Yeah. You know what immediately comes to mind is building materials have completely changed. So I actually, my family home in England is right next door to a sort of 17th century or 14th, I don't know, it was a really old church. So we think I'm pretty sure there are gargoyles up there. There's also a bloody bell that goes off every hour. And there's an old graveyard. So I'm kind of used to seeing those things. I went to the York Minster Song School. So I was surrounded by that kind of stuff. And you almost don't notice it after a while. And I do kind of like it, actually, now I'm thinking about it.
I really like gargoyles too. And but someone responded, this is because I think some of the answers are serious, obviously, and some are not so serious. Because gargoyles were often used to repel demons and other evils, and the ones currently running this shit show would be run off by them.
I mean, they're not wrong.
I mean, maybe a gargoyle or two would end a lot of world problems. Yeah.
I also think, what kind of lame-ass demons would see a tiny little rock carving and be like, oh, okay, well, I've got to go home now.
Are you saying they've not been working all these years? How do you know?
I'm saying that.
Sarah, you're getting into dangerous waters here. You're getting into dangerous waters because I just need to explain something, a fun fact for you. Gargoyles are decorative water spouts that project from the roof and carry rainwater away from the side of the building. Grotesques are decorative carvings with no architectural function. So
we've been calling grotesque gargoyles all the time. Mm-hmm. I definitely confuse the two. But people don't build those beautiful stone buildings anymore, because usually these are carved. And if you've got like a plastic metal monstrosity that you usually have these days, how are they going to fit a gargoyle on there? I mean,
it's just sad, really. And it's your point. And someone did answer seriously and said, well, it's because materials are cheap now and concrete is cheap. And like you said, it's just there's not like the workmanship anymore and the kind of stonemasonry is expensive. And then someone else said a good point that we have a car-centric infrastructure, you know, that de-incentivizes beauty.
Oh.
Yeah, but so the idea that we're always in our car and just driving around from malls to shops to Starbucks takeaway, you know, whatever, we don't need these beautiful buildings anymore, which is sad.
It's weird, though, because I would say that's more true for me in Cape Town than in England. So when I'm in a city in England, like London, I'm very much using public transport and walking around. And in Europe, I feel like I'm much more seeing things than in Cape Town.
Yeah. Well, someone actually said that, and I was thinking of you, because someone posted, well, actually, you don't just have these gargoyles or grotesques that you see, say, in the UK, the traditional stone ones. In Australia, they've done one of a kangaroo sort of looking over the building. So that's quite interesting.
Oh, we do like our kangaroos. We like to put them everywhere. Yeah, definitely.
Bring back gargoyles, I say, and grotesques. More of them.
Yes, and just beautiful sculptures everywhere.
That was the final spin of our Reddit Roulette returns. Sarah, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I mean, so much, but, you know, Reddit, it can be such a fascinating rabbit hole, can't it? And I think it definitely does serve a purpose. So one aspect of being social creatures and then being part of a society is that we feel beholden to societal norms and mores. And if we suspect that our thoughts, feelings and behaviours veer outside of these norms, then we often keep quiet out of fear of being shamed. And having a forum where people can ask difficult questions and get things off their chest without repercussions, I imagine that's very cathartic. It's basically crowdsourcing therapy so that we're not just trauma dumping on our friends. But in real life, when we check our opinions with others to get their opinion, we can choose who we ask, and we usually do, because that's based on whether they have experience, are balanced people that we think, you know, are reasonable. We all know people whose opinions that we would discount on certain topics. So, for example, I wouldn't ask someone without kids for parenting advice. And I wouldn't ask someone who has had a lot of tempestuous relationships and has been divorced, you know, 7 times for dating advice. You get to choose the appropriate person for the topic. Mm-hmm. But the problem with checking for opinions and feedback from anonymous internet users is we just have no idea who we're listening to or who we're talking to. A lot of the time, I think people are just looking for someone to tell us that what we're doing is okay. When actually a good friend who knows us really well, they might be saying, yeah, this might not be a good idea. Maybe you shouldn't. You mm-hmm. might not want to hear this, but mm-hmm. you probably shouldn't do that. But then for others, it can be an opportunity to get feedback when they're in an unhealthy relationship where their partner is trying to convince them that abusive relationship is reasonable. So ultimately, I think one of the appeals of Reddit is that it presents us with a chance to hear about other people's experiences, try on these different viewpoints if we're willing to, and ultimately be entertained.
Yes. And it just really reminds me of when we did our first Reddit Roulette and I said, like, Reddit's become like this new online church. It's where we all congregate and give our confessions and get support. And I just think it's so powerful.
Yeah.
But that's not the end of this episode. We're just going to do a quick roundup of the stories that you sent us and questions you asked that we didn't get around to. And so we'll do this as quickly as we can. But there's some good stories here because, and they really feed into the main episodes that we did this year. And so the first person we're going to do, the first story is about Kate Beckinsale. I think she's going through quite a rough time. I think her stepfather died. She's not been very well. And People magazine posted on Instagram this. Kate Beckinsale is seemingly taking a step back from posting about her undisclosed health issues. The week of April the 7th, the 50-year-old actress deleted all her Instagram posts about her recent hospital stay, nearly a month after first revealing that she was sick. The Underworld star's cryptic social media activity even caught the attention of her fans, with many questioning if she's okay on her Instagram page. And in response to this post, someone said, vague posts looking for attention, and someone else said, have people not learned from Kate Middleton? Way too much judgment.
Mm.
So my first question, Sarah, is I know we talked a little bit about Kate Beckinsale and what she's been doing on social media, but what do you make of it all?
It does seem weird when people are constantly posting things from their hospital bed, but not saying what they are. That is a little bit like, you know, someone who's got engaged and is constantly taking photos of their face, but with their hand on it, you know what I mean? Like, they want you to ask, but they but they're getting you to ask, even though they just want to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I do agree, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. People might not be comfortable sharing, and they shouldn't have to disclose all their medical information. Even if she is looking for attention, I would more feel sorry for her that she feels the need for that than to be bashing her for it, really.
Yeah, and we did talk about it before, because we said she's in this weird sort of interim phase in her career, and this very much feeds into our women and aging episode that we did in season one, in that she's not kind of maybe finding her spot in Hollywood. She's still out there, and I mean, she's kind of in this space now where she's gone through a lot of shit. She was getting a lot of judgment for dressing too sexy, and now it's like she's in this new phase of, like, now she's getting a lot of judgment for all this vague posting, but yet doing posts of herself with rabbit ears on and dressing cutesy. So it is a bit confusing. And one of the things that Kate is kind of famous for is her sassy comebacks, not taking shit. And I think she does kind of, like, you know, she's a very intelligent and strong woman, but I think that a lot of people find that it doesn't quite add up with this, almost feels like attention seeking.
Yeah, that must be hard, because you're in an industry that you're required to promote yourself. That's what's so uncomfortable these days with any business. You have to market, you have to promote yourself. It's something I absolutely hate. I really struggle with. But it is something you have to do, particularly she is her own product, really. So it is a bit of a catch-22 situation. And then I think the more people feel it slip away, the more desperate they become.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a self-fulfilling thing. I also think once people have decided they don't like you, everything you do can be interpreted in a negative light. So, yeah, I mean, I would probably have a social media blackout, but I mean, it's not for me to say, really, but it's I do sort of feel sorry for her.
And then another one was about these crystal baths that have been doing the rounds.
You sent me a picture. It was nice.
Yeah, beautiful. So it looked like a big amethyst bath, but people were saying, oh, I wouldn't get in that. It looks like you wouldn't ever get out again alive. What do you think?
I definitely would, as long as it's smooth on the inside. I've seen all those, you know, sinks where they've got, it's like a geode where it's all jagged on the inside. You just think, oh, how would you clean that? I'd have to see it in person. Hopefully there's a handle so that I don't slip and never get out. I'm like, I am getting to that point with my back sometimes, or my knees, where I'm like, I'm going to need I'm going to need a crane to get me out. I don't have baths very often, no. But I would like to look at it.
Yeah, I think it looks like a piece of art.
Yeah.
And then I just wanted to ask you personally, and I don't know the answer to this, what has been your favourite episode this season?
Oh, God, that's so interesting. I did find Emotional Truth really interesting, but it was such a diverse topic. But I'm going to actually go right to the beginning and say Criminals as Celebrities.
Oh, yeah, that was brilliant.
I'm a true crime fan. I think I've said this many times. So looking at that where those things collide, that was probably my favourite. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, it is a close one between the celebrities as criminals. And but I think just because of memory lane, I'm going to go with the Jerry episode.
Yeah, because you loved her.
I loved every aspect of that. And I just think that we had really good engagement with it on socials. I think a lot of people can remember that time and what Jerry meant for us. And it's just been so intriguing, her journey and all that it means. But yeah, it's been all really good. And we just want to say that we've had so many lovely new reviews in this season. And it's been so brilliant because it's really supported us in kind of not getting buried.
We really appreciate that. Yeah,
you know, because of the Daily Mail launching their new podcast, you know, it really helped us. We've been lucky enough to have some really positive reviews, but I have to end our episode with this review that we got that was one star. Our first one star review, Sarah. And I know you've seen it, but for the benefit of our listeners, we're gonna read it out. And someone said, "You don't know Timu? Loads of question marks. Stop listening after one episode. They've never heard of Timu or took this long. Can't believe this is top 5 podcast in UK. These women don't seem very smart. Brackets, how do they make it so cheap? It's called Straight from China."
You know what's interesting is they almost prove the concept of the podcast itself in the kind of comments people make. And people can be very reactive.
The tricky part of marketing, or like the tricky part of doing social media, is that you have to make it a little bit interesting with questions and write a bit of a blurb. We all know that. But sometimes people literally read some of the blurb on Instagram and then an answer and don't even listen to the podcast, and they assume that we haven't talked about it for 40 minutes. They're not bothered to listen. I get it. And they just respond in the comments. I did go into Reddit actually to look at other people that have had one star reviews, and they said that they just didn't like their accent and got a one star review. And I thought that is quite unfair when you've done all that work. I just don't like your voice. You know, it's like, okay.
Well, it's like for me with Uber drivers, unless they do something really bad, I'd rather just not give them a review than give them a one star review.
But we just want to say we give all our listeners a 5-star review back. Tap, tap, tap.
Yes, we absolutely love you all. We do.
So we're going to be back with season 4. It won't be too long. We'll get back to you on Instagram exactly when we'll get ready for that. But till then, we're going to miss you and take care.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you to our lovely producer, Emily. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe. It really does help us in reaching more people.
You can also follow us on Instagram. Our handle is at S2TC Podcast.
You can find out more about the show, get behind the scenes, come and say hello. Until then, see you next time.
This podcast has been produced by Emily Crosby Media.